welcome to another fantastic episode of the Travel Podcast. And today we are going to be deep delving into a lesser known area of Italy, which is Umbria. And today I'm very grateful to be joined by Chiara and Kathleen of the Umbria Tourism Board, David Lang, who is the owner of Casa San Gabriel and Umbria Lake House, and Marsha Rina, the executive chef for Lina Stores Restaurants. Good morning, everybody. Ciao.
Good morning.
I'm so pleased that you can join us today, and we're going to really explore this stunning region of Italy. So to start us off, can you give the listeners a general overview of Umbria, where it is, how to get to there, and the fantastic lifestyle?
Yes, Umbria is a region largely rural, very green, in the very center of the Italian peninsula. It has everything you love about Italy, except we don't have seaside. We have lakes and rivers instead. It has wonderful food and culture. It's off the beaten path, but easy to get to. We're only about an hour from Rome and an hour from Florence. We have Tuscany and the region of Rome, Lazio, on our west side, and the mountains and the Sibylline Mountain National Park on the east side. So we have a range of type of terrain, from very soft hills to rocky mountains that people use for rock climbing and skiing. It's pretty easy to get here from London. We have a direct flight link from London. And what people love about Umbria when they come here, aside from the culture and food, of course, is there's lots to do outside. There's lots of culture things. There's plenty of small villages that have just bags of charm and interesting things to see there. And because we're not overrun with tourists, people are really happy to see you. They're so happy when you come. It's a place where you can make personal connections. And if people have heard of Umbria at all, it might be for Perugia, which is the capital city, and Assisi, where St. Francis, our most famous son, is from.
That's a great overview. Fantastic. I'm going to get
Thank you.
So Umbria as a region has some amazing outdoor activities. So you mentioned like the climbing and the skiing and destinations to visit, including one of the highest waterfalls in Europe, which is fantastic. For the listeners looking to get out and explore the outdoors, what can they get up to in Umbria?
Right. Well, there's plenty of hiking trails and itineraries all throughout the region. But for walking holiday, you really cannot beat the Via di Francesco or St. Francis Way. It is an itinerary that runs from north to south for a total of 250 kilometers in 27 stages. Officially, it is a pilgrimage. Therefore, it is a walk that you take aiming at a destination. But you can also, you know, walk through along the St. Francis Way, taking just a few of the stages, only for a weekend or for a few days, without aiming at arriving in Assisi or in Rome. Rome is the final destination of the Via di Francesco. You actually are able to enjoy the fullness of the environment, the natural environment of Umbria, because it walks through all mostly rural environment and small villages that are dotted along the countryside. And of course, you can also visit all the heritage, the churches, the monasteries, the sanctuaries that are devoted to St. Francis or to the other saints that are that were born and in Umbria. The route is well signed and is suitable for everyone, for children and even people who are not athletic. However, walking is not the only option. We have a lot of cycling routes, mostly running on greenway paths that are along the rivers. As it was said before, Umbria is landlocked, but we do have a lot of fresh water, streams, rivers, and lakes. And along rivers and lakes, the cycling paths are mostly flat, so suitable for everyone. There is one exception. Ars Poleta Norcia cycling route that was created over a disused railway path. Therefore, it is particularly enjoyable, not only because it goes through some hilly paths in mountains, so it is more challenging compared to the flat lines along the rivers, but also because it has maintained all the railway infrastructures such as 19 tunnels and viaducts, therefore allowing for fantastic views and a unique experience. It is so pretty that in 2015 it was voted as Italy's prettiest bike trail. And again, other challenging routes are available in all the hilly and mountain side of the region. The waterfall, the Marmora waterfall, was mentioned before. It is one of the Europe's highest and offer trails through the park with signs to point to all the different plants and views that you can enjoy on the visit. And it is also possible to go rafting there, not on the waterfall, of course, but along the rivers that flows from the waterfall. And it, of course, there's also a trail that is a steep climb on top of the fall, and you can enjoy a great view from there. These are, let's say, the thing that you can do walking, cycling on the ground, but there's plenty of things that you can do on our freshwater attractions. But I leave this to David, who's the expert here, as he actually has a property and enjoys the Lake Trasimeno, our largest lake here in Umbria.
No, I mean, I'm very partial to time on the water, and I think there's no better way to see Umbria than being either on a boat or a paddleboard, and you get the views of the stunning hill towns. I've been amazed by how this type of activity has increased, pushed by the pandemic and people's search for, you know, to be on their own, to be able to do physical activity in a safe environment. We have lots of kite surfing schools now on the lake. We have places where you can rent paddleboards and sailboats. There's water skiing, bikes to take part in the trails. And if you if you've exerted yourself too much, there's lots of great restaurants to enjoy lake fish and lovely wineries. So I think Lake Trasimeno will become significantly more popular in the future, and still an untapped resource so far. So I look forward next time I'm on my paddleboard to look across, and hopefully we'll get to see you coming the other direction.
This must be why you guys are all so physically fit as well, doing all these bike trails and waterfall rafting and climbing. So do you think is it very cost effective? Is it quite good value when you get there to hire the equipment and things like that? Is that quite easy to organise when you get there?
As far as the walking and cycling, as far as the walking and cycling, yes, it is fairly easy to hire bicycles or things that you may need for your walking and cycling. There's plenty of places equipped for that. I think it's the same for the lake, but David may confirm this.
Certainly, one of those type of things. I have teenage daughters, so. We like to get them out and exercise them. There's also some beach bars and a couple of very nice beach clubs that make cocktails for those who are a little bit older or a little bit more who like their aperitivos. So there's something for everyone, I'd like to think.
Oh, brilliant. Lots of things to be, if you're one for the activities, but also, like you mentioned, you don't have to be, Bradley Wiggins or anyone very sporty. You can take it easy on some of the other trails. So the region has also got a really interesting history with the arts, especially with the masterpieces found in Assisi and the Roman architecture around the region. What are some of the must-see historical and cultural sites around Umbria?
Well, almost anywhere you go, you can find Roman and Etruscan ruins and remains, and often they're just there. It's not in a museum or something, but in the town I live in, for example, there's an amphitheater that is still used for performances, and, you know, people walk past it every day. It's just a normal part of life. But there are some important Roman sites, for example. There's an abandoned Roman town up in the mountains with beautiful views, and it's kind of like going to Pompeii, but in the mountains instead of near the sea. And there are places where people have discovered fantastic mosaics and other Roman remains. In the village of Spello, just in the earlier part, about 15 years ago of this century, they found builders were starting to excavate to build a parking lot or something and discovered beautiful, bright, colorful mosaics. And of course, the arts authority came in, and it's now 15 years later, they've excavated 500 square meters of beautiful mosaic pavement that was part of a noble villa. And it's now been covered with a museum structure. And so you can go in and go in walkways and stand right above these mosaics. And 15 years ago, no one knew they were there. So anywhere you go, there's something wonderful and surprising. And aqueducts and things like that, there's hikes along aqueduct routes. And in the town of Perugia, there's an Etruscan gate and other Etruscan ruins. So history is permeated everywhere. In the medieval and Renaissance period, there's lots of frescoes and beautiful things to see. As you mentioned, in the cathedral in Assisi, the basilica was built when Saint Francis died and was turned into a saint. There's a magnificent fresco cycle of the life of Saint Francis painted by Giotto. And anyone who's taken an introductory art history course has probably seen pictures of these, because it's considered the transition from the sort of static medieval style of painting to the more naturalistic and colorful style and beautiful poses of the Renaissance style. And then going forward another few centuries in Orvieto, which is a beautiful town in the southern part of Umbria, there's a wonderful fresco cycle of the Last Judgment that when you go visit it, it looks very sculptural. It's full of very rounded, physical-looking bodies, you know, the souls and the struggle that they're going through. And it's believed that Michelangelo stopped in there to have a look when he was on his way to Rome to paint the Sistine Chapel. And so, you know, there's plenty of things to see. There's the National Painting, the Umbrian National Painting Gallery in Perugia, if anyone wants to see a museum site. But anywhere you go, there's interesting things. There's fortresses and other ancient things to see. And for people who want to get close to ancient sites, we have a wealth of places to stay that are in disused monasteries or fortresses or something. David, you know something about this, don't you?
So I've been fortunate that in the valley where I live, we have an ancient church where we do destination weddings. And this has become an incredibly popular activity in Umbria, that people are looking for slightly out of the way places which are isolated, and they take advantage of the beautiful old buildings that we have. And we have 10 weddings booked this year, but there are lots and lots of other businesses that are similar to ours, offering quite unique experiences in the countryside of Umbria, incorporating stunning old churches. And we feel that this is something that is a great way to expose Umbria to travellers, but also we're starting to find more people from the cities searching out these areas as well, some of which for things such as wine experiences and tourism that Chiara touched on, involving physical activities, taking advantage of our beautiful hills and mountains. And so I hope this is something that will develop more so in the future, and we'll continue to do our best when they come and let Umbria work its magic on them.
Fantastic. Now, a favourite subject of mine is actually food and wine. And where better in the whole world to go and experience the most fantastic food and wine ever? When I've been to Italy, my personal favourite was a 2 a.m. trip to a little gelato shop. You know, just so amazing. We don't have that in the UK. So yeah, it was just, and the freshest food, the most, you can really feel the love that goes into the food, I feel, in Italy. There's real passion even in there. So Marcia, you're the expert. Can you talk to us a little bit about the Umbrian food that we might experience?
We have been talking about the activities and the culture, but I think the food is also, together with wine, it's like one of the most important things that we have here in Umbria, because it's what I really love from this region is that it's still very authentic, and there is this thing there for who wants to come. They can go to the festivals, or they can go to the farmer markets where we're still having like little producers that
selling like really good ingredients, not very good stuff. And we will like, there is like so many products from Umbria that are quite famous. I will mention like the most probably important one is the truffle. Like everyone thinks the truffle, like if we're talking about a white truffle, we're talking about Piemont, known as Alba, but Umbria is the most important region for the black truffle. We were, it's coming like the black truffle from Norcia also. And even if you go to like a humble like a trattoria, no, you don't need to go to like fancy restaurants. You will find like a scrambled eggs with truffle, pasta with shaved truffle, bruschetta with truffle. So it's one of the our main ingredients. And it's also nice because sometimes there are also tourists, they can also go and hunting with the dogs. The truffle, this is a nice experience to do. Another like very important product from the region is the olive oil. Actually, if I'm not wrong, I think that we are the winner for the third year of the best olive oil in the world. So yeah, it's yeah, Umbrian olive oil, it's quite famous, and it's also like a very nice time to visit Umbria when we do the harvest, because it's a very alive moment, and it's a way also to discover the region from more from the rustic part, and not from the rustic side. So it's I think it's a very very nice experience. Well, yeah, like I will, yeah, I will, I can like talk about the food like all day long, because like I'm a, I think like I really love for this region, and I love that the people can understand that how much we still authentic, and it's also the way the Umbrian people has to they treat the guests, that is super nice and super welcoming, I think, because and you really feel like the place, not the culture of the people. So yeah,
it's been a strength, I think, of Umbria that when people go out and about, they meet local Italians who will do their best to assist them, to give them directions, who take great pride in feeding them well.
Yeah, yeah, it's there is this kind of a very warm people, no, that you can just go for a walk and start to talk and like share experience with someone there. Yeah, Umbrian, I think like this is like why my family fell in love for Umbrian, why David like fell in love for Umbrian. It's still like a probably a spot where you can take your time, relax down, and really enjoy the life from the little bread pleasures, no?
And truffles are a great example of those sort of unique pleasures of Umbria, because they are, you know, you can't find them everywhere. They rely on the weather. They are, you know, this transcendental flavour, and they are only in such particular places in Umbria. And I think some of our wines that we produce here, they are only produced in Umbria. You know, Trebbiano, Scolatino, Sagrantino, these are varietals that are made in tiny little parts of this part of the world. You know, they match beautifully with the food that people, chefs like Masha, create. And they have, you know, very unique flavours. Sagrantino is the most tannic variety in the world.
And also that, well, there is the word nocineria in Italian, that means all the cured meat, cheeses, like the starters, they would call antipasti in Italian. The name comes from the town of Norcia. So can you imagine how much stronger is the culture of the food here, no? To give like, to name something in Italian that comes from the Aliso village in Umbria. And yeah, I think I will not forget about also the cured meat, the prosciutto, the ham, all the salami that we produce, they are an excellent quality.
And chefs like Nigella and Jamie Oliver are trying to recreate bocchetta. But the best bocchetta in the world is in Umbria. You know, you don't need to, you know, you need to try and sort of go back to the origins often with food to find, you know, the places to enjoy it. And
I think one of the best way to taste the food is probably go to this You don't need to go like to fancy restaurants. Like really, every single spot of like a trattoria on Agriturismo, they have their own traditional recipes that they share with the guests, and it's a nice experience because you get into actually into the families, no, into the story of the people. And it's, I think this is the best way is also to travel, no? When you travel, this is what you want the not the real feeling.
It's often their vegetables, you know. It's that's why chefs like Matt are focused on homegrown produce. You know, in restaurants in Umbria, often it's been picked just before you've eaten it. It's things that family grow better than other places in Umbria because of the little microclimates. And you, I think ultimately, it's a way to sort of connect with, you know, a way of life that is possibly changing, but changing very slowly.
Masha, what's your favourite dish to cook?
I have like my best dish, the speech alla nocina. It's a dish that I really love a lot. It is probably, it also was kind of a good luck dish for myself when I started the restaurant in London. This was big, that it can become very, very popular. And it's a homemade pasta. It's like a long spaghetti that you do by hand. And the sauce is with the pork sausage, porcini mushroom, and some also truffle. It's the original recipe has also truffle, shaved truffle on top. So yeah, and I love pasta. I have to say, like pasta, it's my thing.
Yeah. Oh, sounds incredible.
I remember Masha made me a dish with bacala years ago.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it's quintessentially Umbrian. Yeah. And
you know that doesn't have a sea, no? So we are in our cuisine, in our tradition, the only fish that we cook always from the Lago Trasimeno, so it's a fresh water fish, or we use the salty fish, so the salty cod, the bacala, a lot also the aringhe that are the hills, the smoked hills fish. And yeah, the bacala, I think, yeah, because, David used to be a very good customer of my restaurant when I used to have the restaurant in Italy. So I think he tasted like a lot of my food.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's pasta to die for. I mean, it literally melts in your mouth. And it was, you know, it matches beautifully with those sort of high acidity wines that we produce in, for example, the whites. And also, you know, her hearty pastas match beautifully with our sort of Sacrantinos and our big flavoured reds as well. So.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, now I know why you have to do all the activities, because you need to work off all the lunches.
Yeah, busy day.
Yeah, no, it's very important.
Yeah, no, I was just to spend like maybe a few words, because also the Umbrian wine is quite very well known and famous. So if you think about the Sacrantino, then it's a wine that it's known all around the world. And we also have like good white. And but I think like, yeah, David can talk more about the wines because he's actually into the...
we have a small winery as well in the valley, and we are focusing on sort of small boutique production, which often in Umbria is the way. There's lots of fantastic wineries, often family run, small businesses, working with small microclimates and unique grape varietals. And it's a, you know, the wine tourism has become an incredibly important part of Umbria. And I think it will slowly develop as time goes forward and give people the chance to be in the countryside, to learn about the culture through often Italian sommeliers, but also to, you know, to be in beautiful surroundings as well. And it's you know, it's something that I think most people enjoy with families as well.
Oh, it sounds like a really great destination.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, I think it's also like especially families with kids. Like discover a region like Umbria with kids can be super, like really great, like a vacation. Super, because the kids, they really enjoy the countryside, the food. They can have a cookery class about doing the pizza or the bread, the pasta. So it's,
hands-on. I mean, we found little children love truffle hunts. You know, the idea, the interaction with the dog, watching the dogs work, the idea that, you know, something grows. Often kids who grow up in cities that you find something this ridiculous little fungus attached to a root of an oak tree. It's a great experience. And the fact that you're often, you're walking in the woods surrounded by nature, it's something that I think will become a unique experience and one that I think Umbria showcases best.
Brilliant. It seems like there's so many different things to do, and definitely a place to visit and something for everyone also. So fantastic travel podcasts we've had today. But I guess what we need to do is kind of summarize for our listeners. So if you could give me, what are some of your own top tips for the listeners to do when traveling in the region? So you guys are all based there. So give us your personal top tips. Maybe, they can't find on Google or anything. What's your, Chiara? Go start with you.
Okay. I cannot stress enough, as it has been said before, to go out in the countryside. You need to do it after all that food, but it's also a wonderful experience. And you're never too far from the countryside. Even if you are in the main city of Umbria, Perugia, the capital, you're only a couple of kilometers away from the countryside. Even if it's only for a simple stroll or a hike, a 2 days hike, then the countryside is the best way to actually enjoy the region, relax, recharge in the fresh air, and immerse in the greenery.
I recommend that people go out and visit the small villages, because Umbria has a wealth of charming medieval villages. Some of them are down in the valley, some of them are up on a hill. They're always very picturesque, and often there's something interesting to discover there. It might be a Renaissance fresco, or we have one that has a Michelin-starred restaurant. Another one I know has a 99-seat theater that you can still see performances in. It's this tiny, wonderful jewel box. Another wonderful town has an underground to discover, and part of it is taking a walk through at a Roman aqueduct, and you learn about how it was built, and you walk through the aqueduct, but you need to bring a change of shoes because your feet will get wet.
I would also remind everyone that Umbria is a region famous for its events. We've had events that have been running in our region for over 40 years. Jazz events, theater, classical music and film events, and even most recent one like the chocolate festival that we have in Perugia. Even though these events have been closed and sometimes postponed during the pandemics. Even during this time, the Umbria Jazz Festival was organized over the summer in a reduced capacity, but able to attract people for it, because it's so well known that people really wanted to come. So events are really part of our own cultural history and something that I'm sure we'll be able to enjoy soon again.
Yeah, Chiara, how would our listeners find out about the events? Is that all on your website?
Okay, each event has its own website with all the information about booking, of course, but the full list of events and all the news and updates about Umbria can be found on the official tourist website of the region, umbriatourism.it. The website is multilingual and all information are there, including the possibility to book your own accommodation through the booking area of the website. So all information are there and it's updated basically every hour. So you can learn all about Umbria and more there.
Definitely. And all the links will be on the webpage, so you can just click through to find out more about when these events are happening and perhaps plan your trip around some of those events. And what about the food? Can they do cooking courses? Any sort of cooking events that they have?
There are plenty of food-related activities you can do. Chiara mentioned the Euro Chocolate, which is a big, like a two-week-long festival with demonstrations and stalls selling chocolate products. There's cooking lessons for the kids using chocolate. They sculpt a giant sculpture out of chocolate, and you can buy the pieces they chip off. But in any season you come, there's something to do. In the spring, you can go walking in the countryside and collect wild asparagus and then have it made into a frittata or pasta. You can visit in the fall, like Masha mentioned, the olive mills. When people, farmers have picked their olives and they take them to the olive mills, you can go. You don't have to have your own olives. You can just go and watch how it works. The smell is amazing. It's noisy and full of activity and fun. And you can buy fresh olive oil, which is a shockingly green color. If you've only bought supermarket olive oil, you can't imagine how bright green fresh olive oil is. And it tastes especially fruity and spicy the first couple of weeks and until the volatile compounds in the oil kind of evaporate out and it becomes the olive oil you know. But it's a wonderful experience. In the almost all year round, you can go on a truffle hunt with the dogs, like Masha mentioned. And it's easy to arrange. There's people who do the service and you go along with them. And then maybe you stop there for lunch and eat the truffles you found. It's a really hands-on way to do it. And plenty of cookery classes throughout the region. People who will teach you to make pasta, pizza, traditional specialties, cheese. Anything you want, you can find, except then you have to eat it afterwards. So,
and don't forget that all throughout summer, we have the village fairs. As we said, Umbria is dotted with villages everywhere, and each village has its own fair, and it's all, they're all food-related, food-focused. So there's the village fair, they're called sagre in Italian, the sagra for the pasta with fish along the lake, and there's pasta with mushroom on the hills, and then there's the festival for porchetta, and it's all summer, you enjoy these festivals. You never stop going to small village fairs in Umbria all throughout summers, and even in autumn, because anyway, most of our most famous foods like truffle and mushrooms, and the wines, and they are at their best over the autumn. So it's really like a food feast all year round.
And I would add, these are sagre that Chiara mentioned, are things locals go to. This is not something that's put on for tourists. Everyone goes. Like the locals and high school kids serve as waiters. It's a lot of fun and it's very community oriented. And there's a good chance if you go, you'll be the only person there who's not from that town.
And everyone will make
it. And it's a great way for locals to catch up.
Yeah.
I think the fact that you've got all the local teenagers, you know, it's often their first experiences in hospitality.
Yeah.
Where they're, you know, they are all often sometimes dressed in medieval costumes. They have unlimited enthusiasm.
Not unlimited, yeah. And they organize and they prepare their clothing and everything like months in advance. It's like it's a way also to keep the people from the village all together. No? It's something that really comes from the inside. You don't touch the festival to the Umbrian people. It's a very important moment for them. Yeah, really.
And the food is simple and delicious. Yeah. It's not expensive. And it's something that when I've taken, you know, tourists from all around the world, everybody just loves it. It's often followed by some music and dancing, which everybody's invited to get involved in.
I have a friend that she's involved in the Infiorata, no? It's the festival with the petals, where they recreated the picture on the streets with petals from flowers.
And
I think that you will never be able to see her like 2 months in advance from before the festival, because she's always like, oh, sorry, I'm super busy with the festival, I'm super busy. So it's a very nice way, yeah, for the people to leave the spirit of the town.
They take it so seriously.
So seriously.
Which is great.
That's brilliant.
Absolutely. I think that as an Umbrian, I can say that my first volunteer job was at the local village fair. And of course, it was fantastic for the food, but food was not that important to me at the time. But the dancing, David, you're right. The dancing and the music, that was the reason why I went. It's fantastic. Village fairs are really, really a great way to experience the true lifestyle of Umbria.
And we're so lucky with the climate. I mean, the weather is traditionally excellent. And so you have those beautiful long Umbrian evenings where the temperatures makes you want to get out of the house in the evenings and makes you want to sit around and talk to people outside. And it's something that is quite unique. You can't always guarantee the weather, but you can much more than any other place that I've been to, and probably more so than Australia, where I'm from. And so it's one of the huge forecasts that you can guarantee sunshine, beautiful light. You can see why the painters went crazy about Italy in the old days when you come to Umbria and you see sunsets and how stunning it is. So it's there is a lot to bring people here.
Yeah, I must say, when I visited, that was something I took away. I only went when I was 16, but where his nonna that we were visiting, she was sat with the other nonnas outside her house, and they're all knitting together, you know, and it's 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and they're all just having a chat, knitting something. It's just lovely. It's lovely atmosphere in Italy, and Umbria especially sounds like you've got bags and bags of personalities there. Now, before we end the episode, how long would you recommend staying in the region? Is there a recommended length of time?
I don't think that no visit is long enough. With all the things to do and see and enjoy, you can stay for as long as you want. A long weekend is enough to see the best of Umbria, the most important or traditional or famous the destinations and attractions. But of course, there are a lot of people staying for weeks or for a week, especially during the summer, where you can also take repair from the heat in swimming pools or lakes and rivers. And now with this new health emergencies, we think that Umbria would be an ideal place to stay for longer if you want to work from home and find in Umbria a home away from home. So stay for as long as you like, because the region is well equipped with good connections. Working from home is allowed. You can do it, and you can do it in a wonderful setting. So, not only holidays, you can stay for longer.
Yeah, there should be a warning on this episode, actually, of the Travel Podcast. If you do visit Umbria, you may not return to your home country. So just putting that as a warning. So whilst we want you to go, just be prepared. You might not come home. Just take a few more extra bits, maybe, just in case. You guys have been brilliant.
Definitely.
It's fantastic to hear your enthusiasm and your passion for this region. It's absolutely brilliant, and it's really come across today. It's definitely going to be somewhere that I'm going to be exploring with my children very soon. I hope so, when we can, because like you mentioned, it's great for families, great for older people, great for active, but also for chill. You've got so much to go and see there. So thank you guys. Thank you all of you for your time this morning. I've had a brilliant time. I must say, I probably need another breakfast now from all the food talk. And I'm really excited.
Thank you. Thank you to the whole staff.
Thank you.
Okay, well, for more information and for links to what we have talked about in today's episode, please head to thetravelpodcast.com, where all links will be featured on this episode's page. So thank you guys. Ciao.
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 Arrivederci.
Ciao. Arrivederci.